You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Eurobash, episode 53, still going strong. It's me and Niall McGrath, the handsome man from South Dublin. How are you, sir?
I've had better days, PT. I'm not going to lie to you. I had a few beers after the celebrations of Dublin's All-Ireland.
You but celebrating Dublin's All-Ireland? That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's just an excuse. You know, yeah,
you don't even know the rules, do you?
Yeah, barely.
Were you happy with the win all the same?
Yeah, sure. Listen.
An excuse to go on the sauce.
That's it. And a few of the lads are good, are very big Dublin fans.
So, must have been raised on the North Side, were they?
No.
That's very strange. Look into that. If South Dublin intelligence are onto this, follow those guys around. Something wrong there. Something wrong there.
But shut up.
Yeah, it was great. I assumed they would win once they had 15 men on the pitch. So, yeah, very happy with that. Champions again, 5 in a row. Straight onto the half dozen, please. Yeah. I mean, interesting weekend of fights. KSW probably wasn't the most spectacular KSW show we've seen. Few close decisions there on that card. And of course, you had that fantastic main event between Donald Cerrone and Justin Gaethje in Vancouver. And it seems the McGregor sweepstakes are certainly at play in that one. All the talk coming out of Vancouver about Gaethje and McGregor. But before we get going there, let's have a look at these latest news headlines. It's a news. All right, so Jacare v. Blachowicz, November 16th, Sao Paulo, Brazil. I thought he was in with the John Jones show, to be honest. I thought he was... The longer it went on, I thought he could get it. And all the talk in Abu Dhabi was about Jan and John Jones.
Yeah, well, wasn't it... something fell through. They were trying to make the UFC. That's what I think Ariel referenced that they were pretty close getting over the line and whatever. It fell through. They couldn't get negotiations over the line. So, strange one, yeah, definitely.
Maybe a win over Jacare will put him in pole position. We'll have to see how the division plays out before November, I guess. But your favourite buddy is back. Andrei Arlovsky is going to take on Jerzinho Rozenstruik at MSG.
I won't be watching.
Look at the excitement there. McGrath loves a bit of Arlovsky action.
Ah, come on. That's all I'm going to say. Come on, because... Like, 5 years, lads. Come on, let's be realistic here.
Gunnar Nelson v. Gilbert Burns is now going to happen at Copenhagen because Thiago Alves is out. Gilbert Burns in at 170.
Does Thiago Alves have the record for most amount of pullouts in UFC history? It's crazy.
Oh, I actually don't know.
It's mental. I mean, how many he's pulled out of fights.
Lucky enough, they got someone there. I think that's just on the verge of being made. I was speaking to some people from Gunnar's team today and they said they accepted, he had accepted, but I think it's all but a formality.
He's a gamey lad, in fairness to him, Jorginho.
Yes, he is indeed. Danny Roberts will be back for the first time since that brutal knockout at the hands of Pereira when he takes on Zelim Imedeyev in Moscow. I think it's November.
Yeah.
Rhys McKee is going to headline Cage Warriors Cork in Ireland. I mean, he's going to headline the Irish card. I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. He seems to be right on the brink of titles with Cage Warriors. He seems to be the most prominent fighter in terms of next in line to the UFC. Rhys McKee. It makes perfect sense to me. Me and you are kind of saying this anyway, aren't we?
Yeah, for a long, long time. I think we've been talking about Rhys.
Well, just in terms of that main event in Ireland, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does. We've been saying it for a while, and I think, Rhys is the kind of guy that...
Rhys's pieces.
you know, he's eyes on him now. I think the world's watching him. The UFC have eyes on him, and he's certainly not far away from a call up from the big show. And I think a couple of wins will do that for him.
And I think it will really put him over well to have that big win in Ireland. You know what I mean? He has a great support.
He deserves it as well, man. He's worked his arse off in his career, and you know, moving up to 170 as well.
Yeah, and did you see the size of the dude? Yeah. He looks hench, man. Yeah. I saw him over in Vegas there getting that buffet weight on him, but he looks, he's filled out.
Yeah, I was texting today. He's on the Bunsen bandwagon as well now.
Oh, fantastic. Get the sponsors in, Bunsen.
He had one in Ranelagh there a few weeks ago, and he was up with his missus, and he was texting me talking about Bunsen today, and I sent him a picture. I actually got a Bunsen today, so...
see that? He's already selling burgers. May as well sponsor him, Bunsen. Kiefer Crosby has got a new opponent for Bellator Dublin. He's going to now face Hugo Pereira. Fitzpatrick was his initial opponent. He's out now. Brian Moore is also out. As far as I know, no new opponent is being sought for Toby Misich. That's a big loss.
What happened to Brian?
Redzar and Brian, like, in the space of a week. That's two of the best fighters in Ireland, let's be honest. Like, that's tough.
It is tough, yeah. And the card's definitely taking a bit of a blow. Main event doesn't really do it for me either, to be honest with you.
Which one? There's Fury several main and events. Henderson. Yeah, I mean, I'm much more looking forward to Gallagher and Eleanor. You know, that I'm way more.
Especially after last week as well, if you didn't hear the interview you did with him. It was a very good interview. And
yeah,
he seems very pumped up to come over this side of the pond and stir the pot.
Yeah, and as well as that interview, if you liked what you heard there, you should go and check out the full Reptile documentary they did on him, Cal Pacino. It's very, very good. I had just watched that before I interviewed him. The Raptors boys did that one, two legends. But bit of KSW news as well. KSW will be touching down in Croatia for the first time in November in Zagreb, and you got to think that if he's fit, Roberto Saldic, coming off that win last weekend, will have a prominent place on that card. KSW 52, Scott Askham got the fight that he wants against Mamed Khalidov. That is a monstrous fight for December. Really can't wait for that one. I think that's a brilliant, brilliant fight for Askham. In this time of his career, Khalidov coming off two losses, a legendary name in Poland. If there was ever going to be a fight to put Askham across in Eastern Europe, it's got to be the Khalidov fight. He's a legend. He's one of the most legendary fighters, along with like Fedor, who never fought.
I thought he retired. Did you not talk about retiring?
He retires when he wants, man. Yeah. It's Mamed Khalidov. The cannibal does as he pleases. But come on, MMA retirements, like, it's just, they're
that
not
is
real.
True. They're
it's
not
just
real.
Like, listen, mate, I need a few months off.
It's all bollocks, isn't it?
It is indeed. Not the sport, but the retirement.
Nah, the sport's bollocks. Oh, the shy two lads poking the head off each other.
Ah, that's great. Right, so that's the end of our headlines. But what I did want to talk to you about, because it happened over the night, was McGregor's December 14th show. Dublin, December 14th, is what he tweeted. Very confused about this.
He's obviously gone to Mrs. Brown's, boys.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, that's on at the Three Arena. There's no way in hell they're going to put on an outdoor event in Croke Park or the Lansdowne Road. Like, I mean, it's just not going to happen. So I don't really understand what that was about.
They want people to get hypothermia, yeah.
What was that? Like, some of them have been, like, off base what he's been tweeted, but that one seems incredibly off base.
Yeah.
Maybe if he just said December 14th, we'd be like, oh, I wonder if he's going to get put on UFC 245, but...
Yeah, I don't know what the whole Dublin thing was.
That's not going to happen.
It's very interesting.
I'll eat my hat if that happens.
You run around the streets naked.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I said I'd eat my hat, because if it happens, I'm very conscious of my body.
Fucking UFC booked.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Like, I mean, I rang so many people today just to be like, I'm
nobody
not going
sure.
mad here. This can't happen, can it? And they're like, no. Yeah. I don't know. You know,
unless they do a fight night, he's headlining. I don't know. They've done.
But why in the name of God would they do that? with Conor McGregor, the most marketable draw they have, put on a fight night card and not make any money off it, and it could potentially be his last fight for all we know. So, I mean. I just don't see the sense.
Unless
in that.
There's something else happening on the 14th of December, we don't know.
He just
about.
Might be going over a few points and avoiding us all out.
I don't know what the crack is, Connor. But you know, I think it's obviously a ploy as well, maybe to, you know, keep people talking about him.
Maybe,
you know,
get the
stay
Irish
relevant.
Back on side.
Yeah, I think that's going to be. There's a lot of work to be done there. So, man, I really don't know. Very odd, and yeah, I can't really see them doing a card here the same night as a pay-per-view in the US. It wouldn't make an awful lot of sense not having Conor McGregor on a pay-per-view, as you said. So
I went on Ariel's, the MMA reporter show, last week, and he asked me about McGregor, and a lot of people said it was very negative what I said, but I mean, he asked me, how do people in Ireland feel about McGregor now? And
no one has a good word to say.
It's unanimous in that in that sense. Like, I mean, and I do, like, I stand by everything I said. I've listened to it back. I don't feel like I said anything out of turn.
You go to a pub and you know,
people walk up to me, just tell me how they feel about it, and it's negative every time.
Exactly.
I went to the pub on Saturday for an hour, and I mean, I'd say 12 people walked up to me just to tell me, you know, I don't like that guy.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, you know, when people start talking to me about mixed martial arts. That's one of the first things they always say to you. Oh, I can't stand that guy. I don't like this guy. Mm. And that's general consensus around Dublin. And, you know, 99.9% of people will tell you that.
It's pretty astounding, though, from where he's come from, right? Like, to where he was, top of the world. Like, he was in a stratosphere that no other MMA fighter really had been up until that point.
No sports person has ever been.
And now it's bottomed out to a certain extent, right?
Well, he's gone from the top of the mountain right down to the bloody base camp because
he needs to fight, right? Like, I feel like he needs to get back in there. This tweeting stuff is just not
It's all talking shite, and I think that's the only way he can endear himself to fans anymore. Our attempts to make it up to them is by getting in the cage, staying out of the papers, and obviously putting on a winning performance. And as we said a few weeks ago, Pete, his next fight, he has to win it, or he's, you know...
That's what Ariel kind of he kind of said that to me when we were recording. He was like, you know, after I said he needs to get back there and fight, he's like, I don't think it's as easy as fighting. He's got to win.
That is it. He has to win. If he doesn't win, you're talking about a monumental fall from grace, not just a fall from grace outside of the octagon. We've seen it's a fall from grace actually in the cage as well, because, you know, I think we look back at that Habib fight, and, you know, there was a lot of very strange things Conor McGregor did in that fight. And I think if he is to go out and fight Justin Gaethje and lose, you know, I think, you know, where does he go from there? Does he call it a day? Does he pack it in? I don't know, man.
Is that the fight to make?
Him or Paul Felder, I do agree. I think, you know, you can talk about Dustin Poirier as well. Potentially makes a lot of sense to do a rematch there. But I
actually like the Poirier fight, but I do think Felder makes sense if they're not going to throw him right into a championship stake situation.
Well, they're not going to, unless there's an injury to
But
Gaethje's
right knocking on the door there, right? Like, it's either him, if Tony's not next, even if Tony happens next, you think Gaethje is after that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I think it makes sense for McGregor to go after the Gaethje fight, because he beats Gaethje, he's right back on, you know, Habib or Tony's doorstep again. And I think the same goes for Justin Gaethje. It's going to be a big payday for Justin Gaethje if he gets that fight anyway. So he's going to take it. Paul Felder would take it, I know. You know, he called out Gaethje or Felder, whoever wants to go at him next. So I think they're both very difficult fights for Conor. I think that's how we're going to gauge where McGregor is in his career. Is by fighting potentially one of them. And, you know, it isn't the big name of Habib or Poirier, but it's very much a proving ground for Justin Gaethje or Paul Felder as well. So it does make sense.
Yeah. No, I agree with you completely. We'll begin on with our first interview of the day, my friend. Okay, well, for the second time ever, we are joined by European MMA royalty. It is Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who takes on Michelle Waterson on October 12th. We had a great chat with Joanna. She's always been so generous with her time. She sounds pumped up, man. I got so excited just talking to her about this upcoming fight.
She always
fight.
Excites you, doesn't she? She radiates that confidence and arrogance. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I just feel as though, you know, there's a lot more riding on this than even she
that's huge.
It's huge. And she's been told that she's getting a title shot if she wins it. So the Wiley Zhang situation, and with Zhang saying, you know, she's not the fighter she was when she was champion, Joanna didn't really like that all that much. So we go and speak to Joanna. This is quite a long one, so we'll be back in about 20 minutes, guys. All the best. And now, you have been asking for us to get her back on, and we have finally done it. It is the great Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who takes on Michelle Waterson on October 12th. Joanna, how are you? And thank you so much for joining us again.
Hello. Hello, Ireland. Hello, guys. Thank you for the support. First of all, thank you for the support, because when I check my social media, the statistics, I have a very, very big fan base in Ireland, in UK. So, guys, thank you so much for this. Thank you for the support. I always say this, there is no sport without fans, and the Irish fans are very dedicated. So thank you, and it's an honor to talk to you.
Well, that is great. That is great. And I can assure you that means a lot. And of course, as you just said, you do have a massive fan base, not only in Ireland and the UK, but all over Europe. You are one of our very few champions, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me how this camp is going ahead of the Waterson fight.
Oh, very good, very good, very good. I feel great. I'm very happy for my upcoming fight with Michelle Waterson. It was the fight to make, and I think the fans love it. And there is lots of expectations from me and Michelle Waterson. We are headlining the show, and it's an honor for me to do this again. And it means a lot to me, the trust the UFC, Dana, they have in me. Means a lot to me, and I just love it. I've been training pretty hard as always, and before every camp I'm like, oh, quality over quantity, but I do both. I'm training really hard. I do 13 training sessions a week. Of course, we are like 4 weeks out, like before this fight, so probably next week I will cut a little bit the amount of training, but I feel great. And the break I took after the fight with Valentina Shevchenko brought like super extra new energy, fire, desire. I want to just do more, train more, and I feel hungry to fight again.
Yes, yes. And just as you said there, the quality over quantity, is that something you've learned? Because, like, has that happened before where you've just trained your body into the ground because you're just putting yourself through so many sessions?
No. I like to do this, you know. I like to feel banged. I like to feel tired. And, you know, even if the session, training session is good, I'm not happy, you know, because I know that every day with every training session I can do better. So I always set my goals and ambitions very high. So even after good sparring, I'm not happy because I know I can do better. So, you know, but I like to manage this little bit, you know. I manage every training, my coaches, my physiotherapist, they are in touch. I always bring my physiotherapist from Poland for last 4 or 5 weeks before the fight. So it's great, man. It's great. So we're trying to keep an eye on everything. And I'm very happy that every single person who is part of Team Joanna is putting these puzzles together, you know. So that's the most important thing.
Yes, yes. Now, when I look at this fight, Joanna, I think of you, and I know you've contested some of the biggest fights in women's MMA history with the UFC, but I don't see Michelle having that same experience at the very top. I know she's had a main event against Paige VanZant in the past, but do you think that kind of goes in your favor, the fact that you have been in these big spots before, and this could be the biggest fight of Waterson's career, you know?
Yeah, I think it is, and I expect that she's going to show up in the best shape ever. But from we can see that Michelle Waterson is just getting better with every fight. Like technically, with her like cardio, she's improving. So I have to be really focused, train hard for this fight because the winner is going to get the title shot. So there is lots of online and lots of to take, and you know, I will take over that night. I will win and go for the belt after this fight. But like you said, like she's a great athlete, great human, and I cannot wait to step into the octagon. That's the point. And you know, the good plus is that I've been competing a lot in 5 rounds bouts, and from like with every round I'm just getting better and better, and my condition is always good, and I'm not getting tired after like 5 rounds bout. I'm like, oh, let's do 5 more, you know. So I think that's on my side, you know.
Yes.
The pace I can keep. And I'm a real 5-rounder, you know. I went through so many title defenses, 5-round fights, and I'm experienced.
Yes. And I mean, when I think about the matchup, because Waterson is, of course, known for her striking ability as well, but I mean, it just seems like it's going to be such a fan favorite fight, because a lot of the times when we see you fighting, it's about people trying to take you down and take you down because they know how good of a striker you are. Is this one appealing to you, where you can show us the full arsenal of your striking?
You know, like always people are like, oh, what about your grappling? Or what about your jiu-jitsu? Man, Like ATT is like simply like the best gym of the year for the second year in a row. And
yes,
I'm training with top level female athletes. I spar with the guys. I also train with the guys who were competing at ATCC competition and other great athletes. And I'm training with Cesare Matuda, who is first of all my big friend. She's like my sister here in Florida, multiple BJJ world champion. And you know, there is like nobody's better than her, and she pushes me hard, and she's such a dedicated athlete, but also a great teammate. So when I need her, she's there, and she helps me, and I roll with her. Of course, she's a beast. She's a black belt, multiple world champion, as I said. But you know, I can see where I am at with my grappling and jiu-jitsu, so that's a good thing. But of course, my good side is striking and takedown defense. I feel great on the cage, like hanging out on the cage on defense, and I just love it, you know. And if they wanna take me down, they can try, you know. They can try. I let them, you know. But my head coach is Mikey Brown, and Cutter Kub is, you know, legendary Mikey Brown. We do so many drills, MMA drills, takedown defense, and other stuff. So my grappling, my jiu-jitsu is on point as well.
Yes, of course. And I mean, you broke that news. Well, it first came to the fans' minds when they saw it with Polsat. You did the article with them where they spoke about that you would be guaranteed a title shot if you win this fight. How much does that mean to you, Joanna, to be right on the verge of getting that gold back? Because I know that means a lot to you.
It means a lot to me because, you know, I don't want to like talk about it. It's far away behind me. But I know what happened before the fight with the Rose. Mm. The first fight, the second fight, it could go either way. And I know people are like saying, oh, you 3-1, like, oh, now it's the fight like of your life. Bullshit, you know, there is so many fights in my life, important fights in my life, which are going to happen. But the thing is that I'm not looking for excuses, but I know who I am. And like, you know, the strawweight belt, well, he's going like from hand to hand, you know. Nobody can hold it for longer. And I was holding this belt for almost 3 years. I five successful title defenses. Like only Ronda Rousey is better, six title defenses. I know people doubt her, people doubt me, but show me someone who is better. Of course, so much respect to Amanda Nunes, who is my teammate, and she's simply the GOAT of female MMA, you know. But show me someone who could hold the belt longer than Ronda or me, you know. And like I said, people can doubt me, can doubt Ronda, but it's all about what's inside us, you know. Like you said, there's more than 500 fighters in the UFC, only like what, 12, 13, 14 champions with the new divisions. Man, it means a lot to be the champ and defend the belt. It's not easy to win the belt, but definitely it's more difficult to defend the belt. But I wanna my last fight, it was in the flyweight division. After the fight, it was like a super fight. After the fight with Valentina Shevchenko, I decided to take a longer break, reset my body physically, mentally, and I can see how I'm training right now, how my body is reacting, and how much I have learned for the last few months, and just great. I cannot wait to step into the octagon in 4 weeks and show it to people.
Yeah,
and it's extra motivation for me. That's after winning this fight with Michelle Waterson, I will go for the belt. I will go for the belt.
You know, it seems to me like, and you said it there, a lot of people kind of say, "Oh, you're 1-3," but dude, like, must be even annoying when you know that you went up a weight class because nobody else was available to fight Valentina. Your last fight with Rose was so close.
Like, yeah. And we know how the fight was like on and off, you know. And I had only like 6 weeks of training for the fight with one of the best, one of the strongest female athletes, who is Valentina Shevchenko. And it was like different weight class, and people like don't know that it was a higher weight class, you know. Like sometimes people are trying to look at only the numbers or if you win or you lost your fight, but there is something like behind, you know. They don't know much about the training, the preparation, and what's going on. But you know, they are very dedicated fans, and I'm very happy with that. But I do not care, man. Like even when I was winning, when I was the champ, before every fight, I was like, Joanna, just go there and do your best. Doesn't matter if you win or you lose. Just go there and show them who you are. What you've been doing for the last few weeks, last few months, long months without seeing family, friends, being far away from home, and just go there and show them who you are, you know. And this is what I've been doing for last 16 years of my fighting career, you know. That's the point.
Yes, of course, and I agree with you completely. I was just wondering, as you said there, the belt has changed hands many times since your title reign.
Yep.
And I mean, were you surprised by what Wiley did to Jessica? Was that a surprise to you? Because up until then, I only really saw you really being so dominant against Jessica, right? Nobody had ever really done it before you.
You know what? The day before the fight, this fight happened between Valentina, between Andreas and Zhang, I said that this fight was going to end in the first round, and I put my money on Zhang. But the thing is, like, I know how strong is Amanda, Jessica Andreas, so sorry, and I was surprised how big is Weili Zhang, you know, because Jessica Andreas is kind of short, but she's very muscular and big girl for the strawweight division, you know, and but Weili Zhang is very strong. She has big guns, but you know, like when I saw Jessica training on her social media, I was really not impressed, and I was like, oh shit! If she wanna defend the belt, she must really like put on a put more, you know.
Yes, put in more into the training camp. You know?
But she didn't do that, so yeah.
Do you, like, I mean, Weili Zhang has been calling your name for a very long time, and I guess with you knowing that a title fight with her is beyond this fight with Waterson, yep. How does that make you feel about Zhang as an opponent? As you said, she is very strong, but I mean, have you got a good read of how good she is? How good do you think she is, and how do you think you match up with her?
You know, she's good, but, you know, the thing is, the truth is, they offered me Weili Zhang like 3 times before that fight. And the thing is, like, she needed me. Okay, now she's the champ, so maybe it looks like she never needs me to become someone. But, you know, like, sometimes people are like, oh, you know who she is now? Of course I know who she is, but I fight in the octagon, you know? I'm a professional athlete. I'm a businesswoman. I know who I am. I don't do fights on Twitter, you know?
Yes.
If they call me, I'm very happy because it means that I have a strong position. Why are they calling me out? Because they know I can bring them to different level, or maybe they're going to be lucky and win with a former UFC champion, dominant champion who I was. And they can get, you know, better money, better exposure. Just go there. And of course, they offered me Weili Zhang, but my goal was to be fight for the belt, you know. And I took my spot. Now I'm fighting Waterson, and I will go for the belt slowly, step by step. I will reach my goals and my dreams. But the thing is, like, you know, there is a new UFC Performance Institute in Shanghai, in China. Mm-hmm. Probably they needed that good fight, and they just gave the title shot to this Chinese chick. She won. Good for her, you know. I'm very happy for her. But I think she's very strong. She's very dynamic, powerful. She's a good puncher. And you know, I hope she's going to be a good champ for the UFC, for this division, before I face her, you know. That's the thing.
Yes, of course. I don't know if you saw it or not, but Zhang recently was talking in Abu Dhabi, and she said that she didn't think you were as good as you were when you were champion. I mean,
you all should ask her why she was calling me out. These girls, you know, they think when they have the strap, they can talk shit, whatever they want to talk, you know. Or when you're losing, look how many of them were like calling me out after I lost the belt to Rose. They were like, oh, now we can beat you, Anna, because she lost. Now, when I was such a dominant athlete, nobody, like, they were trying, of course, to be lucky and get the belt, but nobody could even, like, you know, keep the pace with me when they face me. And that's the point, you know.
Yes.
They can talk whatever they want to talk. I, I don't play these games, you know. I'm too classy and too serious for that bullshit.
I understand. I'm sorry for asking. Man. I felt I needed to ask because you did
say. That's fine, but you know.
I got to ask you as well, Joanna, about Jan Blachowicz. I thought he was going to get that John Jones fight, but it turns out he's going to fight Jack Array. Were you hoping that he would get that fight against John Jones?
Yeah. I love Jan, and I love Jan, and you know we've been buddies for such a long time. I remember that in 2008, I took like second place on Muay Thai World Championship, and Jan took first place. So we are like a brother and sister. We support each other, and you know. I was hoping that he was going to get the title shot, but I knew that it was going to be difficult, you know. John Jones is a beast, and Jan needs to work more on his, like, marketing, how you say, marketing position, like a value. That's important, too. But, you know, I hope that after he beats Jacare, he will get the title shot.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, now you're only, as you said, you're 4 weeks out. How good are you feeling? Like, compared to other camps you've been in, would you say the 8 month break has made you feel even better? The fact that you haven't fought since the Valentina fight?
Well, yeah, man, I feel great. And that's what amazed me. Like, Mikey Brown is like, girl, you're ready already, you know? So that's the point. I always very dedicated. And discipline, and I feel ready, and I cannot go to show, like, in March, April, I went to Holland to train with Ernesto Hoos, Orlando Heymerts, who I used to train back in the day, 10 years ago. I started winning the biggest Muay Thai trophies with them, and I'm very thankful to them. But the other thing is that, I'm back to doing, like, stuff, what I used to do, you know. I mix more combos. I'm not trying to be focused only on boxing, only on kicks, only on distance. You know, all JJ is back, and I don't want to talk. I just want to prove to people that JJ is back with the same fire, you know, savage, violent, Joanna, you know, and that's the thing. And I spar more this camp, do more drills, like a life goes, and like, not really like, many things got changed, but you know, I feel that, you know, just the point of my view has changed, and I'm even more into than I used to be. And you know, we're 4 weeks out, but I feel ready. You know, I could step to the octagon, you know, even this weekend.
Joanna, I'm even more excited about this. And believe me, I was very excited before I spoke to you. But I can, on behalf of everyone in Europe, we cannot wait to see you back in there.
Thank you, guys.
You're one of the great, great fighters who ever hailed from this continent. And I really can't wait to see you.
That's the point. Like, you know, people are like, oh, if you don't win this fight, you're going to be gone. Like, man, life is so beautiful. There's so many stories. I'm an athlete, of course. I'm a businesswoman right now. But there's so many great things which are going to happen in my life, and I cannot wait, you know. Being an athlete's only part, you know. If you like journalist, if you're a businessman, if you working at, I don't know, Starbucks, McDonald's, in the future you are going to be someone else. I'm a human, I'm a woman, and I fucking love my life, and that's the point, you know. Now it's time to be an athlete. I'm doing this 100%, but I'm a person with so many hobbies, so many passions, and I cannot wait what life is going to bring me in the future, you know. And of course, like I said, I'm 100% focused on my upcoming fight with such an amazing athlete who is Michelle Waterson, who is showing up better and better each fight, and I cannot wait to face her.
Joanna, thank you so much. This has been absolutely amazing. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
And man, like I always say this, like, you know what, like the Irish guys, I could fall in love with an Irish guy only because of the accent, you know.
You're gonna get so many Irish guys trying to get into your DMs now after saying this.
Yeah. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for the support, and I cannot wait for Conor McGregor. I'm a big fan of Conor, and I cannot wait what's next for him. And I'm not just saying because of you.
I know you're a big fan. I know you're a big fan. Yes,
man. Like, you know, I got so much support for him, and I know what, like, I'm hearing what's going on in his life, and sometimes we're getting lost. And I can tell you guys, after I turned 30 years old, I thought that I knew a lot, that I was experienced enough, because I had to grow so fast. When I was 18, I moved to Thailand, then to Holland, then somewhere, you know, being an athlete is such a difficult, and there is lots of expectations from us, and it's such a beautiful sport. There are so many people working for with us, helping us prepare to the fight. But at the end, it's only me and my opponent, you know, when I step into the octagon. And doesn't matter if you win, if you lose, like, both fighters win, you know. And I want people to understand this more, you know, because both fighters always put the same amount of work to get ready for the fights. But the other thing is, like, when I turned 30, I thought I knew a lot already, you know, that I was, like, smart enough to manage my life. But the biggest beat up, like, in my personal life and my fighting or business life, I got when I turned 30, you know. So it took me, like, some time, almost 2 years, to clear the patch, to get away from, like, toxic people, toxic, like, relationships, and, like, bad people around me. And now I feel blessed, I feel free, and I feel strong, I feel happy. And guys, take these life lessons, because these lessons are the most important lessons in our life. These lessons make us stronger, you know, make us better humans. And I wanna go for it. And I keep like, I sending lots of good energy to Conor McGregor, that he gonna handle. I believe that he's going to handle this very well, and he's going to back on like the good patch, the good way, the good road, with the good energy and good people around him. Because sometimes we think that we have good people around us, but these good people, our fake friends, are bringing us on the bad way, you know, on the bad roads, and they bring us down. And when you watch, like, Bohemian Rhapsody, when you watch other movies about, like, famous people,
yes,
you see these rats around, you know. I cannot compare my popularity to, you know, Freddie Mercury or Conor McGregor, but doesn't matter who you are, you know. Be honest. Be honest with yourself. Be honest with people. And better to be honest person, because people don't like honest people, you know. When you too real, you know. But I prefer to be real and have, like, only a few friends, but real people around me, than have this fake rat, you know. And I know, never gonna let people bring me down. I pay the ultimate price for that. Never ever again.
Well, Joanna, that was amazing. Thank you for those words of wisdom.
Thank you so much.
We will take
and
them
guys,
on board.
I want to tell you, it doesn't matter who you are, you know, if you're popular or not. There's shit happening in our lives every single day. We know, we all are fighters. Since the time we got on this world, we fighters, you know. We have to fight. We all have to fight our fights, you know. We all have to fight our fights. The fight is called life.
Excellent. That is amazing, Joanna. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Again.
And I cannot wait. After the fight, I go to Ireland, guys. I go to
Yes,
Ireland.
Please. Yes, please. We'll have to hide you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Joanna.
Love.
I'll talk
bye,
to you soon. Bye bye. Absolutely fantastic to speak to Joanna Janjacek. Really looking forward to that fight with Waterson now, and all the ramifications that go along with it. I'm pumped for it.
Cracking fight. Absolutely one of the best fights of the year, potentially. We're going to see there. On, as you said, the winner gets a title shot. Two of the best female fighters in the world. Who do you think gets that? Like, I find that fight fascinating. I'm really excited about it with Michelle and Joanna. I think, you know, the pace of Waterson, and then obviously the technique of Michelle, it's of Joanna, it's going to be a cracker, man.
Yeah, I feel like the fact that Joanna has fought way more five-round fights is going to really stand to her. And the fact that she's had that break, she seems really reinvigorated. There's nearly 10 months she's been out.
Is it 10 months?
Since the Valentina fight. So, I mean, I get the feeling, like, it's just one of those typical examples of MMA fans forgetting all about someone just because. Like, I mean, she went up and she fought Valentina after beating Tisha Torres. And it was like 6 weeks' notice, going up a weight division to fight the most dominant, one of the most dominant female athletes in the world at the moment. And, you know, she, like, you know, it didn't go her way or whatever, but she still did that. Yeah. Like, and that's, like, I just feel like fans are so quick to turn on people. And the second Rose fight was close.
Very close. You know, and they're a lot closer than people.
Yeah.
A lot closer than people thought.
Revisionist history all the time going on here. Like, I mean, I don't know. I don't get it. I get people like to see, you know, falls from grace or whatever, but I think she's far from that, you know? Like, I mean,
totally agree.
Like, she's right there or thereabouts, and against Waterson, we're going to see how close she is. And really, like, I feel like Wiley Zhang and Joanna would be a tremendous fight. So, I mean, if that's going to happen beyond that, that would be huge. And even Waterson and Zhang, they're two fights that really appeal to me. So, I don't think they should rush Wiley into a fight with Shevchenko. I feel like that's just a silly idea. Like, I know Shevchenko needs opponents, but strawweight is savage at the moment. You know what I mean?
Brilliant. Couldn't agree more. But
what about Tatiana Suarez there as well? Like, I mean, there's so many people. I just feel like they need to calm down and let this Waterson and Joanna fight play out, and let that be the contender. Let's forget about Valentina until Wiley is four defenses in or something. You know what I mean?
I agree. Totally agree. Couldn't have said it better.
It just seems like the automatic thing you have to do now, right? You win one belt and you go, I'm going up.
Oh, yeah, I'm going up. I need to be double champ. Yeah. Shut fuck's sake. Like, yeah. If we've any more double champs, we fucking...
It's completely devalued. Like, just like, I love Habib's kind of thing. Like, I'll just want to be the champion here. Right, let me have a look.
I would be champion of every weight class, though. If
I know, but, like, you know, that'd be unfair if you start competing.
Maybe not flyweight.
Neil Siri come out of retirement to beat you. But, so KSW 50 went down in London on Saturday. It wasn't the usual explosive KSW, you know, but I kind of understand that because so many of these guys had their opponents switched out and, you know, it's hard to do that. And they stayed on the card. We should be congratulating KSW on keeping the likes of Saldich, the Freeze and Park on this card because, like, they're the most important people on the card. They're the people that are generating interest. So, you know.
Did Norman win that fight?
I felt he did, but I knew it was close. And I knew that DeFries' fight was close as well, even though, you know, I kind of favoured Phil. I knew it was close. I knew that Enrique's leg kicks were paying off in the later rounds. But DeFries comes out with the belt, which is the most important thing. You know, he's still the champion. He remains dominant there on top of the KSW heavyweight ranks. And really, I do feel it's time. Like, I mean, nobody's jumping up and down to see Luis Enrique and DeFries do it again. So let's see if Bellator are interested, because that's what I think he needs to do. And I think that works both ways. I think it helps KSW and it helps Bellator.
But he said Matt Mitrione, whatever, put out a tweet or something saying he'd be interested in fighting him again, doing that. Like, I've no problem with it. You know,
if Bader Ryan needs Bader. Like, Bader doesn't have anyone there, heavyweight. Yeah. Maybe Karatonov. But, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's pretty shallow there at Bellator and heavyweight. Definitely. So Phil going over would be a huge thing, I feel. Thomas Narkoon shows us again how dominant he is at light heavyweight with a guillotine choke of Missy Ali. He dropped him with a right hand, then pounced all over. It was a really nice finish, actually. Roberto Saldich takes on a really, really tough opponent. Poitrax. I don't. That's what his name is. But this lad is like usually fights at middleweight. He's a very accomplished grappler, so Saldich is a nightmare, basically, and he takes him on 4 days' notice. And people are upset because he goes to a decision. You're like, come on, man. Like, I mean, it has to be that way sometimes. Like, what's the point in him?
Tony Ferguson, Lando Venata.
Yeah,
same thing.
Going hell for leather just to please people when he needs to hold on to that. Like, he needs to hold on to his dominance. He needs to hold on to his win streak.
I totally agree with you.
I felt like the criticism was pretty.
Sometimes you need to just get in there and get out with a win. And he's done that obviously, you said 4 days' notice. And there's a lot of fucking moaning and shit. And it pisses me off when people are like that.
Norman Parks takes the interim lightweight title with a win over Marcin Josic.
We know what that's setting up.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing that Jim Edwards tweeted about this while it was on, Norman's been training with Gamrot's team. I wasn't aware of that. Like, some of them were in his corner and everything. Like, apparently.
Jesus, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know it either. I was like, what the fuck?
But I thought they hated each other. Like,
I need them to hate each other.
It was deadly. You remember in Dublin, they had to, like, they couldn't even bring them into the same room, man, after the fight, like, because it was so mental. So that's disappointing.
I don't want any water being thrown on that fire.
Yeah,
I want to keep that shit ablaze.
We need to stir some shit.
Exactly. We love shit. Damian Janikowski gets back in the win column with a very strange finish of Tony Giles. He goes in, runs through him, takes him down, moves to side control. And then the referee stops the fight, apparently, because Giles had verbally tapped out. There was a lot of protestation afterwards, but, you know, I don't really understand what happened there. But Janikowski seemed to think it was a finish anyway. As far as he was concerned, Giles had verbally tapped, so I don't really know. Jason Radcliffe gets a KSW win there in his debut, and Dricus du Plessis at middleweight gets a second round win over Jolton Santos, who you remember fought Craig White in his Cage Warriors return after his UFC stint. Not a good night for Catherine Costigan. Rolla,
yeah, she got well finished in that second round.
Yeah, and Rolla moves to 3-0. Tough one for Catherine, a long time out though, and coming back at an event like KSW is no easy out, I'll tell you that much. It never Definitely. Is. So yeah, that was pretty much the KSW stuff. About the UFC, I mean, Justin Gaethje looked fantastic there in the main event, man. It was, he seems to be fighting with a lot more kind of caution, I'll say. Like, not, I know it was still a very violent finish, but he's not just balls to the wall from the first bell.
He's more selective.
Yeah, 100%.
And in terms of Cowboy Cerrone, you know, where does Cowboy go from here, man? I don't know. You know, he was sort of moaning about the stoppage. It was fine to me.
Now, in fairness, he did take that back afterwards. He's like in the heat of the moment, you know.
Yeah, it was a fine stoppage and a fine finish from Justin Gaethje.
Gaethje was appealing to the referee for maybe 5 seconds before it was stopped.
Yeah, he was just poking the head off him effectively. Yeah. And it was a good stoppage for me. But, you know, in terms of Cowboy, man, like, he's not where he was. I wouldn't mind seeing him call it a day, to be honest with you.
I know, but I mean, it's
I know,
like,
it's hard to say that, but and he's one of these guys, I don't think we'll ever see him probably fully retire. He's one of these guys that, you know, take a year out and maybe have the odd fight here and there if the money's right or whatever. But, you know, where does he go? What, it's sort of just a bit of a yo-yo for him over the last couple of years.
I will say, though, like, I mean, we're not that far removed from the Oya Quinta bout. You know what I mean? Like, when it seemed like everything was turning up trumps for him. And then, of course, there's Ferguson and Gaethje, two very top of the food chain, lightweights, of course. You know, it's funny how public opinion can change in MMA, and I guess he's another example of that. But you're not the only person who's saying this about Cowboy after that fight, I'll tell you that much. Is Gaethje the man for McGregor? I certainly think so. I think that's a great fight.
I do. No, I like it. As we talked about earlier on, you know, I think Gaethje is that sort of one fight away from getting that title shot with a big win over a name like McGregor. Same goes for Paul Felder. But yeah, I think that is the one to make. It's the most logical one. I think the UFC, obviously, from what Conor McGregor said in that interview with Ariel, said they were close to actually making that fight last July. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But yeah, it does seem to be the next one in line. And we'll just have to wait and see.
Is he going to fight him in Dublin on December 14th?
Yes. No. But yeah, like that is the fight for Gaethje. If he's not getting a title shot, that's the next best thing for him. It's a big money fight as well. So yeah, do it. Why not?
It didn't go well for Nikita Krylov. It's been a patchy return to the UFC for the Ukrainian. Another win over a European for Glover Teixeira. And what a 2019 he's having. That's Carl Robertson, Ion Cutelaba, and Nikita Krylov. 3 fights in about 9 months. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought he was done after the Corey Anderson loss, and now 3 wins in a row.
Bounces back, you know, that's in that division as well. 3 wins can nearly get you a title shot, as we said before.
Jan Blachowicz won't like the sound of that.
Yeah, well, there you go. So
maybe that's who he has to fight.
I don't want to hurt Jan. But yeah, listen, a couple more wins, he's right in the door, definitely.
We'll talk about this last fight, and then we'll move through just to the European guys. But Todd Duffy and Jeff Hughes, interesting. I felt as though Todd Duffy had spent himself.
I think he was looking for a way out, man. That's the way I look at it.
The Hughes didn't seem like we've seen some pretty horrendous eye pokes, and I mean, it's probably it is impossible to know how bad it is unless you're the guy getting it in the eye. But I thought that was just strange, you know, the whole situation. Like, I mean, are we wrong to criticize a fighter saying I can't continue because I have double vision? Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think look
at his body. Look at the way he was sort of projected himself. It looked as though he was done, as you said, and was looking for a way out. And yeah, listen, I wasn't too convinced.
Like, the doctor had effectively told him, you're ready to go, yeah, that's fine, and he said, I can't see.
Yeah. You know.
You could even hear DC struggling with it from the commentary. Like, I mean, he was like,
Yeah, like, what do you say? What do you do? Do you run it back? I don't know. I believe he no-showed for
I can't imagine.
A couple of interviews as well today, so
I can't imagine Dana White was jumping up and down to see that.
No, especially after
for
4 years as well.
Duffy has had a bit of a roller coaster with him as it is. So
yeah, they've had a very sort of frosty relationship over the years, and you know, 4 years out and you return like that, just leaves a bit of a bad taste in the mouth, man. It really does.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Pereira, who we were just talking about earlier, who last...
Fucking antics of that guy.
I know, but I mean...
It's hilarious.
That's what he does. You know, that's what he does. And I mean, it's so funny that when he makes his debut and it comes off against Roberts, everyone's saying, he's my new favourite fighter, to this guy's a clown within one fight. Like, I mean, we are a very fickle fan base.
But it was a bit OTT, that's some of the stuff he was...
But that's what he does. That's the way he fights. I mean, look at his record. I mean, there's no evidence to suggest this guy is a world beater. I mean, it's just, that's what he does. And I guess it looks really bad if it doesn't come off, and it looks really good if it does come off.
Yeah, I look fucking stupid the other night. Let's be honest.
Oh, you could crack watch it, to be honest with you.
It'd be like me fucking trying to do the worm in the cage. Do you know what I mean? Like, here.
Not a fan, though.
No.
All right, okay. Misha Serkinov with a beautiful Peruvian necktie. So rare.
Your favourite, Petey.
Oh, man, I love that fucking technique. It's very hard to get, though. Like, I mean, it's really, really tough. You have to be on the perfect place on the guy's back.
You've attempted to give me them in the hotels when you're drunk.
Yeah, and I can't figure it out. So if I can't do it when I'm drunk, I don't know how Misha Serkinov, professional athlete, can pull it off in a fight. I mean, wow. But, he finished Jimmy Crute, who was, that's his first professional loss.
Beef on Crute.
Oh, there you go. Very nice. Don't know what that is. But Augusto Sakai also got a devastating finish of Marcin Toivura just a minute into their fight. Absolutely battered him up against the cage until the referee stopped the fight. And just of note as well for European fans, Brad Katona of SBG suffered a loss to Hunter Azure. That's him now, 8-2. I believe that's two losses on the bounce for Brad Katona. And just as Niall nearly falls off his chair. But
it's all right, Niall.
Yeah, not too bad. But that's all really we have of note here for the Europeans. So will we push on with our second interview of the day?
Let's do it.
Okay, well, let's speak to Mr. Paul Felder, who everybody is dying to hear from. Following his win over Edson Barboza. Barboza has protested. He said he will appeal the win. The defeat, I guess, in his case. And, of course, we asked him about the McGregor sweepstakes. Everybody is keen to be the man to fight Conor McGregor. And Paul Felder is one of those names that is generating more and more interest. So let's see what 0 to 100 had to say to us. And let's see if his skin has held up after that blazing Abu Dhabi sun. See you in about 15.
Delighted to welcome back on the show and coming off a fantastic performance and win at UFC 242 in Abu Dhabi. I believe he is now fighting at light heavyweight. He's put on so much weight over the last week. It is the Irish Dragon, Paul Felder. Paul, my friend, how are you? Putting on the pounds, I believe.
I am. I'm on my way to go lift with my strength and conditioning coach, Rich Poehler, here in Jersey. But I've actually, believe it or not... I haven't gotten as fat as I normally do after a fight because I've been able to actually work out and move around and take walks. I mean, I went for a 5-mile walk with my daughter the other day to my mom's house. Just threw her in a little coach, a little stroller, took her out. And I couldn't do that when I had lung surgery or broken arms and broken legs and shit like that. So it's nice to come out of a fight and be able to live my life.
Paul, I got to ask you, and it was an issue and a theme all week on fight week, the heat in the arena. How bad and how challenging was the heat in the arena?
It was really hot. It was really humid. But I had some time to prepare for that because I fought so late in the night. So, you know, Bilal, my teammate, fought before me, and Duke was there, and Daniel Vandalet, and they were all kind of warning us, like, hey, it's really hot as soon as you step out of the warm-up room. So don't do a crazy warm-up. Don't do anything over the top. You're going to be warmed up. You're going to be sweaty, so you don't need to burn yourself out. And my guy from Lockhart, Ian, Chef Ian, man, hooked it up. He anticipated how sweaty it was going to be and gave me another rehydration shake a few hours before I left for the arena to get some more electrolytes in me. So props to him on thinking ahead like that. So I felt really hydrated and good considering how sweaty I was going through those rounds.
I want to ask you, and it was evident to see, you know, you were in tears after the fight. I know how much that fight meant to you to get that win back. I noticed your jiu-jitsu coach, as you mentioned there, Daniel Wanderlei, was actually in tears too. What did he say to you after the fight? Because it was very emotional.
he's just saying, you did it, man, that you got that one. We did it, you know. And just all week when he was there, you know, I'd be drilling with him, and he's like, listen, this one is yours. He got the first one. You get this one, and, you know, we'll move on from there. But you got what it takes to beat this guy. You didn't have the structure and the things and the maturity to do it when we fought him the first time. It meant so much to all of us, man, because they knew how much it meant to me. They could feel that, the whole camp. They could feel my nervous energy, I've told you, too, how terrified I kind of was to fight him again, because I knew what I was going into. I knew the pain and the brutality of what a fight with Eddie Barboza is like, and I 100% was anticipating another war. You know, I don't go in there ever assuming I'm going to knock anybody out. You know, those are rewards.
How did you feel, Paul, when the judges were calling out the scorecards? You know, we've seen what Edson has said. He believes it was his fight. I believe it could have gone either way. It was a really, really close fight, in my opinion. It was 29-28 all day. I don't know where to. The judges got a 30-27. But, you know, the other thing, we spoke off air there a few minutes ago about your work from the back. And I was actually really happy to see that the judges actually scored for your elbows and your armbar attempt. What was your feeling going into the decision?
Well, you know, the first thing I did is throw my hands up because I knew it was going to be razor close, right? I've never denied that. I know how close this fight was. I know that it could have realistically gone either way. Look at the numbers. You know, we were neck and neck. Overall, threw more strikes, landed more, but that's overall because of my third round. He might have edged me out with a couple strikes here and there in the first two rounds. He definitely, I thought he won the first round.
Yeah.
But based on my aggression, and, you know, when I land shots, I feel like I staggered him a few times. I don't think he ever fucking once staggered me in that fight. The only time I got cut open was from freaking headbutts, whether they were my fault or his fault. That doesn't matter. They were not from his significant strikes. And I didn't take a step back. I mean, I moved forward the whole time. I was throwing with lethal intention to knock him out. When I was on my back, I split him open, and I forced him to disengage from a top position on the mat where he could have easily tried to sit and win that round, but he couldn't because of the damage that I was doing.
Yeah, I agree.
I won that round, and everybody that thinks otherwise, you're entitled to your opinion. It was a split decision. Get over it.
I agree. It could have gone either way. It was a razor close fight. Were you disappointed with Edson's Instagram post on his actions and what he said after the fight? Because it has sort of come across a little bit as like sour grapes.
Yeah, you know, I know he's upset, and I know he's not had the best winning record lately. So I feel for him. I feel for his family. I know how much the money means to him. I know his wife even came out and said something like, "Why? If I have all these other opportunities, you know, why don't I go take them?" You know, emotions and financial stuff. And when you think you won the fight, we both thought we won that fight. So I get it. Is it upsetting me? Did it leave a bad taste in my mouth that these guys who I thought I was really cool with are basically just saying, you know, it was a highway robbery? I mean, that's what upset me most. Mm. It's like, listen, if you just admitted it was razor close and you think you should have got the nod, okay. The judges, yeah, they're all over the place. But two of them scored it for me, not you. I mean, it sucks. I've been on the other end of split decisions. I've lost two split decisions in the UFC.
Yeah.
So going into that decision, you know, I'm nervous as hell. And if you look at his face, so is he. I know they were confident and yelling, you got this, won this. But so is Duke.
Yeah.
And we're all just trying to put positive vibes out there and keep everybody, you know, from losing their mind in these situations. There's so much tension when you're waiting for those decisions, especially after a war like me and him had where it was just, I mean, we beat the crap out of each other. Denial, know what? That upsets me, I think, most of all, right, is I just have this epic rematch with Edson Barboza, the number 7 guy versus the number 10 guy, and we go at it. We're obviously fighting tonight. I know we didn't get awarded it because Dana did 4 performance bonuses because of all the knockouts tonight. But we're fighting tonight again.
Easily.
Put on an even better battle than we did the first time. And what are we all talking about?
Yeah.
Arguing back and forth on who should have. It's like, wow, that's really unfortunate.
Is it disrespectful? Do you feel disrespected?
Yeah, I kind of do. I'll be honest. I can't sit here and say that I don't feel slighted in some way. And I feel like so much of my social media, instead of feeling, you know, the positive love from my fans and number seven in the world, instead I'm dealing with all his fans basically trying to trash me.
Mm. Have you moved on from this now? You know, I think it makes sense for you to move on and look ahead, but is there any interest in you, you know, running it back?
I said what I had to say because, you know, at the end of the day, that's a possibility. Does that mean I want to do it right away? No. I mean, I'm number seven in the world right now, and there's some guys ahead of me that I've been itching and scheduled the fight. You know, me and Al still have unfinished business, and I love that guy. I think that guy's awesome. But if he beats Dan Hooker, you know, I think that's a great matchup. Obviously, I want to fight Justin Gaethje someday, but I feel like he's really deserving of a really big fight moving forward. I'm not fighting Cowboy, so that it's very limited on who's ahead of me. So we'll see what happens from here. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I'm curious to see what happens, to be honest with you.
What did you make of Conor McGregor's tweet last night? He put out a tweet saying 14th of December in Dublin. I don't know what that's about. There's a UFC pay-per-view on the same day. Is that something that would interest you?
Fighting him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like making money, Niall, so of course I wouldn't mind that. And plus, he's up there, you know. He's got numbers next to his name that I want to take. I think, man, you want to talk about a fight that, you know, it's going to be a goddamn striking battle with me. And Connor's obviously going to not try to take me down either. But I'm also one of those people that's not going to sit here and play his game and beg for something like that. I know I'm not the guy that's going to get it. So I'm not going to go crazy trying to, but I would absolutely love to throw down with him.
You mentioned one thing as well that sort of caught my ears, you know, in the post-fight interview, that it was the toughest weight cut of your career, yet you still made 155 pounds. Why was the cut so hard, Paul?
Man, I'll be honest, man. I think at this stage in my life, I'm a big old boy, man. I'm getting thicker. I'm getting stronger. I'm always working with really good strength and conditioning coaches, whether it's in Philly with Rich or Matt Gifford in Wisconsin now, and I just felt big for that fight. I did everything right, and you know this. I dieted the whole 8 weeks. I was, you know, I had a chef cooking for me, all these things. I took all the possibilities of temptation out of my life. No peanut butter even in the house because, you know, I get my fingers into that late at night. I just, a lot of weight. I had about, you know, I don't even want to say the numbers on what I had to cut the night before, but it got dicey, and we got through it. And Ian from Lockhart, man, I love that guy. Him and Jay did my cut, and thanks to my team too, Craig Eckelberg, my teammate, is always there for me during these stuff. But yeah, it was the first cut in a while at 55 where I was like, holy shit!
Does that change things?
I don't know how much longer I can do this.
Does that change things going forward?
Man, you know what's so crazy about weight cutting is us fighters have such a short memory for pain like that, right? I mean, if you'd have asked me that night of the weight cut, I was called my mom in the middle of the night. I called one of my friends, Brian Jones, and I was just hurting. And everybody was trying to basically convince me to move up to 170. And I was like, you can't tell me that. That's what you kept telling people. You can't tell me that. My mind is not thinking anything other than beating Edson Barboza tomorrow night. And that is at 155 pounds. And at the point, I was on weight. I made weight. I made it the night before. It was horrible.
You made championship weight, Paul.
I know.
Which was pretty insane. If you're talking about how difficult the cut was to still get on 155 pounds was incredible.
Well, part of it was probably that too, that we were low. Those last pounds or so, man, they add up, boy. That's a pound of water. You know what I mean? People don't realize that don't cut weight.
Mm.
That's a pound of water. They're like, it's 1 pound. I'm like, yeah, try sweating it out.
I know I couldn't do it, dude, but so you're definitely going to be at 155 pounds for your next fight.
Listen, I'm ending my career at 155 pounds. I'm going to do a couple little adjustments, I think, next time. I think next time I'm just going to cut a little more in the morning hours. I think I've been trying to push it later just so I'm not suffering during the day. But based on how that one went, I think getting on top of it a little sooner so I can get a little more rest in between the pounds. I'll just have to look worse for wear at media day. And here I am saying it now. So next fight that Paul Felder's and you guys at media day, just be nice to me.
Yeah, you were surprisingly in very good form at media day. Normally you're very grumpy. I don't blame you for being grumpy.
Yeah, it was pretty good because I kept the weight cut to a minimum in that morning. I always wake up and do a pad session with Duke with the sauna suit on and cut a few pounds. And I only cut about, I think, 4.5 pounds in the morning and then at media day. So normally I might do a little more next time.
So people are going to know, Paul, obviously, you know, I would imagine you wouldn't be back in the cage before Christmas. What is the time frame? When do you want to get back in there? Is it after Christmas?
Yeah, we'll see, man. I feel pretty good right now. I've got a lot of commentary gigs lined up, but the UFC is very well aware that I'm fighter first until I retire. So I'll do these first few, and we're in the middle of we're going to start renegotiating a new contract with Sean or Dana and figure that out.
How many fights have you got left in your current deal?
I technically have more fights. I'm on my last fight, so it's either re-up or be a free agent. And I have no desire to really be a free agent. I feel like the UFC knows I'm a company guy now, and you know, I've put my body on the line for years, and have always put on a fight of the night type fight. So I'm hoping this goes well and we get what we want, and we get a big name next. And if it's sooner than next year, I think I could make it happen. My mom might have a freaking heart attack. But yeah, man, I'm trying to push the pedal to the metal, as we say.
If there's a name you could have now, you want to fight someone, who is it?
I would say Justin Gaethje or Dustin Poirier.
Why does Dustin become so attractive to you?
Dustin, because he just fought for the belt. I mean, if I can skip the line and jump ahead like that, I mean, shit. And he's great striker, a great boxer. I feel like it lends for the kind of fight that I'm used to being in, the fans want. So no matter what happens, we're probably getting a bonus. It's going to be one of those fights that's just back and forth. Who's tougher? Who can take the bigger shots? And that just, those are the kind of fights that turn me on.
And does the same go for Dustin then as well? Or Justin Gaethje, should I say? Dustin.
Yeah, Justin's just a freaking savage, man. Like I said, I don't call this guy out because I have anything against him. I mean, you just saw what he did to one of my friends in Cowboy, and I'd love to get in there and test myself. I do think that guy's going to be fighting for the belt today, so... You know, these are the guys you got to beat. You got to beat the toughest dudes out there in order to, if I can't beat these guys, I've got no chance against Khabib because he's just going to, you know, out-wrestle everybody.
Have you watched back that fight? What did you make of it? Is it, you know, do you see Tony Ferguson giving Khabib problems? What did you think of his performance against Dustin?
I thought he did what he needed to do, man. Yeah. And, you know, he avoided most of the damage. He's caught in some of Dustin's best submissions and was able to get right out of him and just break him on the ground like he does, man. Just pressure like crazy. And I do still think he's got to work on his striking. He's going to, if he can get exposed there, it's got to be early, man. You've got to let him know right away what he's in for, because if you let him push back, forget about it.
Yeah, I agree. Paul Felder, enjoy your shit food for the next week and get back into camp soon, because I think everyone's pretty excited to see you get back in there again. I'm looking forward to seeing you back in there again. I always appreciate the time, my friend.
I love talking to you, man. Hope I'll get over to
eat some Kerrygold.
Ireland. Just eat blocks of Kerrygold butter with you.
My man, I appreciate it.
And great to hear from Paul Felder.
El Dragano Irlandese.
Oh, yes. Wow. In perfect Spanish, just ahead of this weekend's.
I'm going to Spain next week.
Oh, yeah, that's correct.
New York. You're going to Australia.
That is correct. That's amazing. So, pressing on.
Beware.
Oh, Jesus. He's putting on the Tinder Plus for that one, lads.
I got rid of it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, can we leave that to the end of the show?
All right, sorry.
I can't wait to talk to you about that, though. Well, this weekend we have UFC Mexico City.
Mexico.
Yair Rodriguez and Jeremy Stephens in that main event. That's a very tasty main event. But
sorry, I don't speak Spanish. I'm a man. I'm an anchor man. Right. I'm annoying you. I'm like,
yes,
daddy.
So underneath Yair Rodriguez and Jeremy Stephens is the co-main event, which is Carla Esparza and Alexa Grasso. But...
Oh, look, wait for it.
I'm very, very, very excited because Askar Askarov is finally making his UFC debut. That's class of 2018 prospects to watch in Europe for Peter Carroll. Yes, I do call them. And this fella is a magician. He's actually, he's deaf. He's a deaf guy. He's won wrestling championships. He's an amazing grappler. And
he's actually deaf.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And he is just unbelievable, man. His grappling is psycho. It's not like anything in the UFC at the moment. And Brandon Moreno is a great test for him straight off the bat. I mean, Moreno...
That's good, dude.
Exactly. Like, I mean, if Askarov can get through him, he's going to light another little fuse in that flyweight division, which we believe should be hanging around. So I'm very, very excited about this, I have to say. Really, really excited. And I think that matching him with Moreno shows that the UFC can see the potential in this guy. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree, definitely. Moreno's no fucking mug, man. And yeah, to go in and start like that, I'm really fascinated now to know more about this guy.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
Saying that to me, because I remember you speaking about him. But how does his corner communicate? Do they do sign language or?
I don't actually know. I can remember I talked to Luke Thomas about this once because he's a big fan of Askarov as well. And I actually didn't know until he had that conversation with me that he was deaf. We've been watching him for years. I just didn't know. I knew he didn't do many interviews, but his talent is absolutely astronomical. There's a lot of fights here, not of European interest, I will say. But we do have Paul Craig there on the prelims against Vinicius Moreira.
Needs a win, man.
He does need a win, absolutely. Is it win or a marching order situation?
Yeah. We look like he's what? He's 4-2 in his last six.
2-4.
2-4.
It's not the worst record, though. 3-4 isn't terrible in the UFC.
It's not, but...
It's not ideal.
You know, Paul has sort of faded in a lot of his fights, in my opinion. So the longer the fight goes, he just sort of gets really sloppy, and I think he needs a performance maybe as well, is probably the word. And definitely needs a win, in my eyes. What are you grinning at?
Nothing. I realised I was grinning when you say it, but just listen to your fantastic voice, my friend.
It is. It's good, isn't it?
Dulcet tones.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else jumping out for you there? Is Sergio Pettis against Tyson Nam on the undercard?
I always like
there?
Watching Alexa Grasso. Followed her career since Invicta. Tough test against Esparza. Nothing's really jumping out to me. Sergio Pettis, Tyson Nam, good scrap. Nam, is it Nam's debut? Or is he returning?
Returning, I believe, right?
Have a look here. Yeah, but he's only recently back with the promotion anyway. So that's an interesting fight. I think it's a replacement as well, if I'm sure. Yeah, Alex Perez was originally supposed to fight Sergio. So
I think I have an arse where he's actually is. Has he ever fought in the UFC?
I don't know. He was in WSOF.
I know he's in Fight Nights Global as well. No,
yeah,
he's never.
WSOF. No, yeah.
I always thought he had fought in the UFC. He hasn't.
He's a name. Like,
yeah, he is.
He's a well-known name.
He's a commodity.
That'd be a good scrap, that one.
Beth Correa against Sahara Eubanks. That's a...
Yeah, Sahara's coming off a loss to... who was it? She lost there recently. Aspen Ladd.
Yes.
If I'm not correct. So that's an interesting
You are correct. Yeah, that's a good fight. That's going to be actually... I'd say that could be quite an aggressive striking fight.
Yeah, you love the main events.
Yeah.
Stevens and Yair.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I really do like that a lot. It's another
the
really...
The hardest hitting 145
pounder. It's Jeremy Stephens. That's who it is. Yair. Yeah, Yair feels like... I mean, it's not a great style matchup for Yair, I wouldn't say, because the pressure is unlivable with Stevens, isn't it?
It is.
Not really going to give him a lot of space to be throwing crazy techniques, I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah, that fight against Chang Yung Zhang was Chang Yung's
Chang Sung Jung.
Chang Sung Jung
nailed
it. Jesus Christ, was absolutely phenomenal that finish. So it is. It's one of those ones that is sort of. I think we'll be disappointed if we're not talking about an explosive finish on Sunday morning. So I'm looking forward to it. It could go either way, but yeah, I do think that four pressure is going to be a problem for him.
But it's going to be a big
do Wilkes when Stevens gets going.
It's going to be a big one for him though if he wins in Mexico. I feel like it's going to look amazing, like
home
you know?
City and all that. And yeah, it's a big one for him, and it'll definitely push him back up there in the title contention again, I would imagine.
You probably noticed that Noel's mind has been elsewhere when he's talking about this card, because this weekend something very big's happening. Is it this weekend? The Rugby World Cup?
Oh yeah, Friday the Rugby World Cup starting.
Oh my
starting,
god.
They're playing on Sunday against Scotland.
What time?
Game. I think it's 11:30 here, 10:30. Right. It's early though. A lot of the games will be on like 4:30 and shit like that.
Oh yeah, because they're 8 hours ahead.
Yeah. So a few of the lads are going over for a few minutes.
Tell them to check out the Golden Guy. It is the way forward in Japan. It's amazing, man. It's like that all that area with them small little bars.
In fact, they had to quadruple their beer production.
Tell you what, they don't have to quadruple their whiskey, man. They have any amount of whiskey over there. I'm not messing with you.
Sake stuff you got me. I haven't drank yet. So.
Yeah, that's more of a sweetener, that one.
I mean, might have a drop on Sunday morning, but like, I won't be drinking any alcohol like, the way I'm feeling today. But yeah,
I think you'll find a way through somehow.
Yeah,
I think sure.
I think I'm gonna go on the dry now till I head off to Mallorca next Wednesday. So
that's next Wednesday.
Wednesday
is it?
Week.
So we're gonna have to try and do some weird recording thing before you go or something.
Yeah,
get guests sorted.
We'll work it out.
We'll always do that shit for you guys. Tell me about this now. You're going to Spain and you've parted ways with Tinder. Is this a first
for no, your still first Tinder? I just got rid of Tinder Plus.
Right. Oh, okay. So, I mean, until you land there, you can't really explore the potential suitors for you then, really.
I'm sure there'll be plenty.
I mean, they'll be queuing up outside the hotel. I wouldn't give away your IP address or anything like that.
It's actually busy there because, like, we had a late addition to come over with us as well, and one of their lads, and he was finding it hard to get a hotel for the Friday night, so it's pretty busy in Palma.
Have you booked a number of rooms just around the city, just in case?
Yeah.
I've a
number of hotspots, they call them. So,
McGrath hotspots in Palma.
So, we're sorted on that front, Pete.
Well, look,
I'm sure the minute I get on the plane, the air hostesses will be...
I just hope you come back in one piece.
She's so do I.
It's a fear I carry all over the world.
The way I'm feeling today, I could easily wilt under the pressure.
Yes, indeed.
It was a busy weekend of drinking, and it was unnecessary as well. Do you know, that sometimes it just happens, and it's like, ah, fuck it.
I was a superstar this Saturday. Showed up in the pub just before last orders. Had two groups of friends in the same pub. The Royal Grappling Academy were there. I went over and said hello, got in and out quickly without them eyeing him choking me. I was very happy with that.
Jesus, normally it's the other way around. You give this lad a few beers. Anytime we're away, after fight night happens, PT's fucking there on the bed trying to take my fucking knee home with him.
You think the Gracie do a good breakdown? You want to see me on the sauce after a UFC event?
It's actually a nightmare.
Unbelievable.
It's a nightmare.
Unbelievable, Techers. But yeah, that's all we got for you. I hope you enjoyed the show. We certainly enjoyed each other's company.
Did we?
Oh, why do you hurt me? Why do you just hurt me all the time?
Looking forward to the Aussie, oi.
I'm not looking forward to the flight, but I'm looking forward to being there.
It's good. It's a good spot.
Yeah, yeah.
Be nice and getting nice and warm there as well.
Is it going to be Abu Dhabi warm?
No. Their summer's November, December.
We're not going to be touching the 40 degree mark.
It'd be nice. Like, be 20 odd, I'd imagine.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Yeah. I'd imagine so.
Oh,
it won't be 50.
Not worth the 26-hour flight, I doubt it. But
Paul Feller survived it anyway. He'd be all right.
Yeah, me and Paul have to compare sun cream.
Yeah, listen to the interview you did. That was quite funny, actually. You said to him, "Are you melting like me?" Paul's really fair. Like,
yeah,
like,
Mike Brown and Paul were all kind of keeping on tabs on each other. You okay? Yeah, come on, fight the power. But yeah, that's the crack anyway. Lads, we love yous very much. You know we do. So we'll see yous next week, I guess. And I hope the weekend and the week is good to yous. All the best.
Mwah. Fuck off.
Give him a kiss.